Namaste and in Laketch, and welcome to this episode of One World in a New World. I'm your host, Zen Benefiel, and we are going to have a really dynamic conversation today, apocalyptic in nature, I'm sure. And I would like to welcome this week's guest, Victoria Rader, who is just a magnificent woman and spiritual being in her own right. She is a possibility coach, a transformational speaker. She's an internationally known best-selling author. She's a founder of U2Shine LLC. She's got a doctorate in philosophy and metaphysical sciences, which I just am fascinated about. She's also got a BA from George Mason University in Russian Studies, Economics, and Statistics. Interesting, and psychology as well. So that's an interesting mix. And she's an author of three books.
And I'm going to play. Sorry, at this point, eight. Little overachiever here. Oh, sorry.
Well, okay. So I've got 20, so I know how that is. So they're all suffixed with me. And they are Miracle Me, Manifest Me, and Prosper Me. And I'll have those links in the description below for you to peruse and purchase. So, Victoria, thank you very much for being here. This is going to be a wonderful conversation.
Thank you for having me, Zen. I'm very much looking forward to it and am enjoying it already.
Cool. Yes, we did have a little prelim to warm up a little. So, diving in, when did you've got this really huge repertoire of understanding, experience, wisdom that had to have started early. And so how did you initially find that inner awareness, your inner voice, guidance, that connection to the inner world? Because it's pretty well known now that we live half outside and half inside. We're bereft of what's going on inside, hence one of the reasons for having these conversations. So how did your inner journey start?
Well, in the beginning, there was matter.
Oh gosh, that sounds so epic. In the beginning.
In the beginning of all beginnings, there was no beginning, and you and I were co-create. Okay. So yes. In this lifetime, in this beautiful storyline, I was born in the former Soviet Union in Ukraine. And I think, I lean in into the question asked, allowing for the answer to come through. That is probably the greatest value for the conversation. And what came to mind is the story that I sometimes share that I think woke me up to awareness, but the awareness of that came a little later. And the story was, I was five. And in the Soviet Union, our electrical sockets are about twice the amount of electrical power. So, it's not recommended to be toying with those. And I was five. I was very curious. I was very creative. And I wanted to have a hanger for my doll's dress. So I grabbed the first handy thing, which was a metal pin out of my hair. And I found a place to stick it in to create a hanger, which was the socket. And so gratefully,
experience there, eh?
No, shocking. It's been gratefully, I'm still in my body here, but the truth is, I did not get electrocuted because the fuses blew. And so did my grandpa, who was watching me at a time, and he ran in and I couldn't understand why I was screamed at. I couldn't understand anything verbally, but I was experiencing true, real fear and true, real death. Participation, and my subconscious mind was programmed for fun leads to death through fear. Now,
wow.
I'm saying that because I can understand it now. At age five, there was an imprint, a fun, bright spirit. All of us come into this world to rejoice. And for all of us at some point, the first damaging imprint of either mortal fear or true death comes in, and that's how it came into me.
Well, don't forget public speaking. That's number one on the fear list.
Well, yeah. We can thank our parents for that as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Quiet until you're allowed to speak. Don't say that. I mean, we can always go back to that. But, two things that I think I want to make aware. One, because of that subconscious programming, death became a companion and a teacher in my life. You know, I've experienced a lot of very close people by me crossing over while I was leaning and learning the value of life. I've had a couple drowning experiences where I was leaning and learning the value of life, you know. But that's one side of the journey. The other side of the journey, however, was this gorgeous parallel for all of us that just like there was electricity coming into that house, it was coming at the same level of power. But the resistance in the fuses and all the devices breaks the power down. So the little light bulb in the refrigerator is very dim at 15 amps watts, but the brilliant light bulb in the living room is 100. So the power's the same, the input is identical, the output is determined by resistance. That concept is the concept I continue to lean into, because all of us are sourced through the same source of power, and we have one job in this life, to get out of its way, to release our resistance, so that the maximum capacity for light we've come to be shines the brightest. That is the journey of everything that I'm creating and co-creating. And I believe it started at that five-year-old point of unaware awareness.
Sure, sure. And I had that similar, I didn't blow any fuses, but I used a train transformer. I took the ends off of it and I held it in my hands and I cranked it up to see how much I could handle. And man, that felt really cool. But it was only 110, right? There was not that
baby shock.
Yeah, that wasn't a big shock. However, it was a different experience. And then, you know, what you said about the experience of the higher self, it echoed what I had a conversation with Dr. Irvin Laszlo about, because that's where he comes from, is, you know, we have this higher self that we need to embody. Well, how do we do that? That's the question. And how many layers of bandwidth are there, you know, in that stepping down of frequency to be condensed into this form? And, you know, as we were talking earlier, what I learned from my personal experience was that we're all cosmic consciousness condensed into form. We're just unaware of that, which seems to be exactly what you just said, only framed a little differently.
Yeah. And I think to go with that framework of you describing it, I think I look at it from two aspects that help me realize that. I know there are eight levels of us as beings, starting from the unknown level. There is a part of us that is always unknown. And because the true essence is unknown, because it is the essence before awareness. And so
the nothingness.
The nothing. Well, nothingness is a description of it already. So it's already the lower seventh frequency. We are unaware and unknown it. So whether it is somethingness or nothingness is right. For us at the seventh plane of
the
curiosity. Yeah, I'm a brain, you know, brain candy. He's like, I gotta describe it because
We are always seeking to describe the ineffable.
Yeah, exactly. And so then you have all of these, you know, conscious bodies as you're describing them, of where you have that buddhic and atmic and causal bodies, which is the awareness of logos of God, the feeling of God, the knowing of God, and that causal body or spirit then goes further down through the bodies of, you know, mental frequency, mental body, emotional frequency, emotional body. And here it comes, physical body. So from that perspective, we can say there are seven plus one of who we are. I like to simplify things. Why? Because I'm addicted to brain candy. So I need to know, I need to go to brain candy fast. So I'm like, it's a brain candy fast. When the girl gets excited about the eight, how can she simplify? And so the way I've simplified it is back to that little me that you're saying, everything is me in our products. Because for me, it's very simple. There is little am, which is I'm mortal. I am matter. I manifest materially. I am also big E. I'm eternal. I'm energy essence that expands. Now, however we describe the M, however we describe the E, I simplify it. So when I remind myself who I am, I say, I am me. I am that eternal mortal that choosing both at this time. Neither one is better. Mm. Neither one is better. And so I think people often say, well, I'm not this body. Of course you are. Of course you are. You've chosen it to be. Of course you are. You're not your body only. But of course we are. Isn't that gorgeous and glorious?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, the incarnation, the being present, that eternality of the energy that we are, that because of how we have learned how to think in the preparatory stages of our, you know, maturation process, if you will. Sometimes we start early and have a little more, have a foot up on things, if you will. And so we begin asking deeper questions and exploring. And which, are you familiar with, there's two gentlemen, or three gentlemen, actually, I want to ask you about. William Swigard's one of them, and he was around in the 1950s. And then Vernon Nepi and Edward Close.
3 for 3.
Okay.
Complete unawareness. Cool. But the truth is truth, so I'm sure I agree.
Oh, yeah. You know, and we probably know so many people we don't know yet. And right? So William Swigard developed a technique back in the 1950s called multiplane awareness, which is a facilitated process of accessing your light body and then ascending through 9 planes of consciousness and integrating your body on each one of those planes, and then dropping them back off on your way back in. And then that was in 1989, I experienced that. I got the prompt to come back, and instead of just staying there and listening and following the facilitator's prompts, I heard, okay, I want you to get ready to come back. And I thought, oh, okay, I'm ready. And I come back and I look at him and he says, uh-oh. I'm like, what? He says, you're supposed to drop the bodies off where you got them. And I went, oh, well. And so needless to say, I had a party in my room for a couple of weeks until a friend of mine spent the night and woke up in the middle of the night, says, my God, how can you sleep in here? There's got to be at least a dozen different beings in this room. And it occurred to me, oh, that's me. And I'm just learning how to play better, right? Well, so, and then Nepi and Close in 2010 published a quantum theory of everything paper called the triadic dimensional distinction vortical paradigm. And they posit that consciousness, space, and time are tethered across how many? 9 dimensions for the human experience. It doesn't eliminate other dimensions, and neither does the multiplane awareness process. However, it says, okay, here's what we've got to work with as human beings. So there's that bandwidth in the stepping down, which is one of the questions I asked Dr. Laszlo, if he'd considered those kinds of things, and how the solfeggio tones, the spiral dynamics, multiplane, the TDVP, and I think there was another one, all patterns of 9, just kind of seemed to be saying the same thing from different perspectives.
Interesting. You know, I'm thrilled that I'm unaware of that, because it gives me the luxury of receiving a direct answer without, you know, without crossing over. And so as I'm receiving and accepting so fully the teaching from you, I'm speaking, I'm having an internal conversation with Creator saying, show me how to simplify.
Yeah.
And I'm shown immediately the rainbow is 7 colors. Those are the 7 chakras, the 7 bodies that we've talked about. Mm-hmm. Coming down. So you have the red on the top all the way down to the purple coming down. And then I'm shown the double rainbow. And the double rainbow is reverse. So when you have double rainbow, it's the way in and out. And I say, okay, but he's saying 9 and I'm seeing 7. And the second my higher self asks that question, I receive the full answer. Yes, because all 7 are the iridescent, brilliant white light, and none of them, the absence of all, are the dark. And so mm-hmm. there you have the beginning and the end of the 9 consciousness, of where you have the vibrant 7,
right,
where you have the absent and the presence complete. Now, this is a theory that's formed here as a result of conversation. We will not find any study on it. But isn't that right? Gorgeous? Isn't that
yeah.
gorgeous how yeah. you bringing it in with this completely new concept, and I go to the source and I say, okay, a person from the street, show
yeah,
how me
that
how
fit?
Do I show that? Yeah.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah, cool.
That as we were, you know, talking about that, it's amazing how that actually fits, and it does have this simplified presence of it. And it also reminded me, the reason I mentioned nothingness earlier, there's another gentleman from the 1950s, his name's Wilbert Smith. And he was Canada's UFO investigator. They ran what was it, Project Magnet, I think is what it was mm-hmm. called. And it was funded by the Ministry of Transportation. So it was a fully legit program, right? And he had conversations with people from elsewhere. And one of the things that they related to him that he had written in his diary that later got published as his memoirs was that humans don't understand nothingness. And that's what they based their whole system of knowledge on. And the nothingness is where everything comes from, right? It's our term for the void, right? And we're told in everything that we read, ancient scriptures and things like that, that everything comes from the void. Well, so this spoken word, if you will, becomes spellcasting over time. And the better we get at thinking and feeling it and speaking, that as you found it, and how did you, because I hear that in your voice and the clarity that you have and the connection that you have that's unfiltered, right? Mm-hmm. It's just like you go in and you ask and you accept what that information is, which is that greater level of clarity. How did that begin to come about in your particular journey? How did you discover that? And maybe what are some key things that you might offer that others can?
I think, you know, in my life, I've realized that I was seeking the connection so much that I was disconnecting myself from that clarity in order to have the connection. A lot of us disallow the sacred to speak through us because we need to be aware of the connection. But if you're one with something, you are unaware of it. So
it's just part of you.
It's who you are. And so, and what I see for a lot of my very enlightened seekers is that they go through, just like with anything in life, there is the progression from unconscious competence, unconscious incompetence, I don't know what I don't know, to conscious incompetence, I don't know, but I mean, I know what I don't know. Then you have conscious competence, I know what I know. And then finally you say, I don't know that I know. That addiction to needing to know keeps us in conscious competence and disconnected from the sacred connection, because I need to know that I'm connected. So when that part of ego dies, when that part of ego dissolves, and you no longer need to know, when you allow the knowing to die and disappear, the sacred speaks through you. It's a painful death. But as I've mentioned, as you've guidedly asked, my teacher has been death. So every time I lost a dear friend, a client, a family member, a beloved pet, a part of me was dying. It was not a soul part. It was an ego part of attachment to the outcome of keeping them. Finally, I've been so stripped from need of holding on that I said, fine, you know, fine. There is nothing but life. I accept it. And that was the sacred moment where, and the second sacred moment, which I haven't shared because it's just so recent and because you created such a space for it. For the last 6 months, there was been saying, do you trust me? And I would say, of course I do. I've trust with that. Of course I do. Mm-hmm. And then the brain goes, well, I trust you with everything. I trust you with caring for me. I trust you. Finally, I realize that every time I would say, I trust you, I trusted with my scared self, with the little am. And all I'm being asked to is to trust with my sacred self. Do you trust me to travel the worlds at a moment of thought? Do you trust me to create from ether? Do you trust me? Ah, that is what I need to be working on, right? And so it's a consistent conversation, and it's giving yourself a permission, saying, allow for me to surrender to love so completely that it speaks through me without me needing the proof. And letting go of the need of proof.
It's a fearless surrender that's at the core of vulnerability.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Now, how would you intimate the process of being able to reach that place of fearlessness
yeah.
and acceptance of the flow, right? Because we tend to, both from the head and the gut, right? We are electronically trying to push things. We're magnetically trying to pull things, and then we can't figure out, okay, well, what's not working, right? When what we're really doing is we're looking for flow. So yes. how do you find that, or describe the process of accessing the flow?
Yes.
And then the reflection, the observation, the description of not just what you think it to be, how you feel it to be, right? Because there's a huge distinction between those two.
Gorgeous. First things first, yes, I'm a very practical girl. I love teaching and living spirituality through practicality of little M. Because if my big E does not satisfy my little M will sabotage the big E. There's your reason for absence of flow.
Funny how that works, huh?
That's your absence for reason of flow. Until my sacred loves and accepts my scared fully and completely without need of healing it, changing it, accepts it and loves it. That's the beginning of flow. So knowing that, I say, okay, little M, let's have a sit down conversation. And I've developed three very simple questions. I'm going to give anyone who wants to follow them that immediately put you in a flow because you surrender to the answers and you live from that place. These three questions are responsible single-handedly for any and all visible achievements that are irrelevant in my life and to spiritual growth that is fulfilling in my life. However aspect you want to do, achievements are not irrelevant to little M. Here go, little M. I'm proud of you. Good job, little Vika. And here comes the big E. Now, we love little Vika can just be fulfilled, right? It's, you cannot reject the part of you. So here are the three questions. And wrapping the conversation back to what we just said about conscious competence, the way it sounds is unconscious incompetence is what flow? What are you talking about, right? Flow, I mean, then you have conscious competence. Oh, there is a flow. I'm going to study up. I'm going to listen up. I'm going to find the flow. Then you have conscious competence. I know when I'm in the flow. I'm in the flow when. And then unconscious competence. I am the flow. I cannot describe it. I am the flow. I'm the flow. That's the levels of in our previous framework. Now the three questions to invite us there. I have chills as I share them because honestly, if there was a greater gift I could have offered, I would have done it right now for this space. This is the greatest gift. So at the beginning of each year, or if it is middle of the year and it's the first time you have it, we've all heard it's a popular thing to have a theme for the year. I think it's gorgeous, glorious when it's received from higher power. So you just pause for a second and you ask, what is my guided theme for the year? I can tell you incredible miracles that came as a result of that. So you receive your theme for the year. For example, Zen and I have an aligned theme. Mine is miraculous global expansion. His is entering into 23, laying the foundation for expansion. I feel it. I have tingles through my body. However you frame it will be for you. But whatever you receive as the foundation for the year, that's your theme. It can be a word. It can be a sentence. Then you receive that. You don't question it. It doesn't matter what you got. You don't question it. It's your first level of trust. Then you go to the second practical question. Every month, on the first of the month, day before, day after, you're going to ask, what is my theme for the months to support my annual theme? My theme for January, when the interview is being, you know, recorded, is laying loving foundations. Okay, got that. So my January is laying loving foundations for a miraculous global expansion, whatever it means to the divine. And here comes the third connector question that invites flow daily in a most practical, sacred, and fulfilling way. And I invite everybody to ask it the way I'm offering it because it has been polished through hundreds of client sessions. If you find a more effortless way, fantastic. But for now, let's learn the tango before we improvise, right?
Yeah, survey says, right?
Survey says. The question is, every day in the morning, as you set your day, you're going to say, what is one decision I am to make or one action I am to take to support, and then you name your theme for the months, in my case, to support laying loving foundations in the best and highest, most aligned way. You ask that question, you receive your answer. Whatever answer you receive, you're going to implement immediately. Spirituality is very simple. It's immediate implementation.
Mm-hmm. attention, intention, and interaction.
There you go.
Right. It's funny how that trinitized fractal appears everywhere in such wondrous ways, just for us to see, right? Yeah. When we begin to peer into it and to look at things. And what struck me as you were slapping me upside the head, what engaged me deeper when you said some of the things you did was this notion of radical curiosity, right? Of just being able to ask whatever questions as deep as you want to go and know that the connection you have with the infinite intelligence will provide the answers. Now, timing is always the key, right? Can you shut up long enough to hear it? Or does your mind take over and you begin to experience life and the daily stuff and it takes a while for it to get through? What's that? Obviously, you have advanced to a point, as you demonstrated earlier, when you checked in, asked the question, got the answer, reflected on it in real time. How long did it, or do you, how are the things that can be noted in the process apparent for the experiencer? How does that process take place? And what are the kinds of things that you noticed that helped clue you into, yeah, okay, I'm in flow, right? Even though you were kind of, maybe undulating in it at the moment.
No, I love your question because there's gold in the way you ask your questions, right? And the questions created allow for the gold to come through. And so I think for a lot of us, we seek connection, we are taught, and it is accurate that the connection of discovery happens through the three higher chakras. You have the crown chakra that receives the knowing, you have the third eye that sees the knowing, you have the throat chakra that expresses the knowing. But this is your purpose. Your three top chakras are your purpose. And very often we want to cut through chase and be purposeful. But then you have your heart chakra, which is the love center, and peace is the awareness of love. And only by connecting deep through self-acceptance and self-love, you are in peace without need to know. Mm-hmm. So when you self-accept, self-forgive, and self-love to the degree that you no longer need to know in order to self-accept, self-love, and self-forgive, when your heart flow of peace opens up, it opens the purpose. And when that opens open, when that purpose opens, it flows down to the lower chakra, which is for me is the path of prosperity. So this beautiful way.
So then it allows it to be satiated.
Yes, absolutely.
In the right ways.
In the right ways. So as we're seeking for clarity, we tend to stick. And I see a lot of us when we are, I call it brain candy for a reason, we're detached from grounding, we're detached from the feeling.
Oh yeah, we live from the shoulders up and forget about the body. It's an instrument too. We just don't know how to tune it yet, let alone play in concert.
Exactly. Oh, that's gorgeous. Oh, bravo. What a great metaphor, right? And so we become bobbleheads of spirituality. Is it here?
I'll be one for a moment. Yeah.
Is it here? And it's like you have the rest of you, and consciousness is equally present through every atom of your body as love originating vibrant emotion or energy in motion, which is my acronym for love. Mm-hmm. Love is life originating vibrant emotion. So we start with love, we surrender to love, we live through love. And through that, the purpose, the connection, the flow is reestablished. So first practical step, ask yourself, the subconscious will answer, what is the one thing that you are to forgive today in order to open your ability to love and accept yourself in order to be fully present in the flow of love? What is that one thing? What have you been postponing or being unworthy to receive the forgiveness for?
Don't try to deny the answer. I've noticed that in some, and me too early on, but when you get the answer, the first thing you want to do, it's like that still small voice that's so loud that you just brush it aside. And you're like, no, that can't be your, those kinds of things. And it takes a while before you get over yourself, right?
A lifetime, apparently, or many, depending on your framework.
Exactly. Now, in the in that process too, are you familiar with the three brain philosophy of the indigenous way?
Yes, the brain, the heart, and the guts. Is that what you're
referring
to?
Yeah. So this kind of ties in, again, another one of those trinitized fractals, right? Where the gut is where the, even science proves now that there's neurosensors there. This is where we connect. And according to their way, this is where you connect with the vibrations of creation. Mm-hmm. And then the heart kind of says, okay, does that resonate? Does it not? Is it desirable? Is it undesirable? That's the Taoist part of it, right? And then your brain has the opportunity to make the best choices with the clear information that it's being fed, rather than looking at the outer world and the confusion and the chaos and the challenge that it creates in order for us to engage and play in effectively, which with the narratives that we've been given, especially in recent years, that's tried to separate us for some reason. Cause effect doesn't really matter. This is what's happening, right? And so how do we, what would you suggest we do in order to look at that and say, now, wait a minute, I have a choice here.
You know, once again, we're going to thank this moment for the answer coming through me. We have three brains but two hands. Why is it that we have only two hands? Because we can only ground into two of them simultaneously. Mm-hmm. So we can disconnect the one that's the loudest and full of fear. This one's job, the brain job, if it's disconnected from the two major brains, is to fool us fill us with fear, but yes, to fool us with fear.
You know, did you know that the original, when you look in the university style dictionaries, the two volume set, and you look up the word Satan, the very first reference is the Greek Thetan, Thetan, and it means thinker.
Oh, yeah.
Totally dissolves all the outer push of, oh yeah, there's a devil and there's a Satan and all this kind of, you know, extraneous crap that's been used to manipulate us, in my opinion. Right? Or it seems that way. And survey says that's probably true too, now that, you know, everything's unfolding through the internet and truth telling. So how that was just, you know, what you were talking about is reflecting on how we think, right? We've got that vacillating, that duality that exists in our head and representative of our body. However, we're a balanced holistic system. Would you, let me put that in the form of a question. How do you see this balanced or sense this balanced body equation, finding that practical application and aligning with what's deeply embedded in our core and becoming that perfected form, fit, and function in the world?
Yeah, I think I want to answer this question by kind of delving deep into what's just, you know, been shown so beautifully. Because if I put my one hand on my heart and I remind myself I'm love, and God is love, I am love, and then I put my second hand on my solar plexus, you know, or closer from solar plexus to your guts, which is supposedly the second brain, and I remind myself I'm light. If I connect into the core of who I am love, I am light. I disconnect the brain and it becomes the servant of me as love and light, as opposed to controller of love and light. And so I think that would be a very practical thing for a lot of clients that are in point of anxiety. Anxiety is the brain racing through the future, right? And depression is brain stuck in the past. I actually do have them center themselves into these two centers and then taking three breaths that you breathe in and you breathe out slower always because it comes down your nervous system. So sure. You put your hands on, you breathe in, you breathe out slower. You come down, I'm calm, I'm peaceful three times, I'm love, I'm light. And then you can ask any question and the two brains that matter will give you the answer. Mm-hmm. And then and only then you can say, and how can this little guy, how can my brain implement this answer? Because we need brain for practicality.
How can I play better?
Yeah, that's what I'm shown, right? We are overtaxing our brain because we wanted to answer why or what. It's not his job. This is the why through love. This is the what, the light. Brain's job is the how. So find mm-hmm. the what and the why in your light, and then task the brain with the how to support the answer. That comes as that structured creation, you know, that you're asking
about. Now, do you find that the anxiety is often misinterpreted anticipation or the universe quickening, going, hey, get it ready, something cool is about ready to happen?
Sometimes if you're aligned, if you're an aligned person, that is very true. If you're a person, it goes back to which one of your two parts. Is it your sacred self or your scared self that is in control of your life? If it's your scared me, then anxiety is the brain response to unknown. Mm-hmm. If it is your sacred me, then yes, it is actually an anticipation of the unknown, right? The big difference, fear of the unknown, scared, anticipation of the unknown, sacred. So response, similar. The cause is different, and the result will correspond to the cause.
Is there a transitional process that you would recommend to move from one to the other for those who have a tendency to be on the scared self side?
Yes, I have a free meditation. Choose sacred me. Out of gazillion things that we have a 6-minute meditation. Choose sacred.me. 6 minutes reprograms you of how to connect to the sacred and love the scared parts of you. And, you know, people say, well, how many times do I do it? And I'm like,
until as often as you need to.
Exactly. Right? Until you know you're no longer in fear, you know, and that's, and I have to say that it's true. There is not one thing that I've created for somebody. That's how my company has grown. I had a need and I couldn't find it being met. And so I've pondered and I've created a product. Every single product, service that we have on the market, you know, we laugh, my team and I, like, well, you know, it's great if somebody else benefits, but we're this little, you know, thriving group of people that is so joyful. And so that's one of the directions I've received in that daily question. I'm sorry for the word, scared the shit out of me, okay? And I said, okay, I didn't think I was scared. I'm scared now. Why am I scared? What do I do about this? Right. I'm not scared to die. I'm not scared of losing somebody to death. I've finished it all. But this little thing, why am I scared? And the answer came immediately. You feel scared so you can learn to love, or so you can teach others. Okay.
Right. And fear is the door.
Yeah, and that's how that meditation was created.
Who was it? Mixed Blood Cherokee storyteller that I met long ago, may he rest in peace, Willie Whitefeather, wonderful man. And he says, you know, what we seek, what happens is that we experience fear from false evidence appearing real. Pardon my brain fart there. And what we seek to do is free every anxious reaction. Mm. And I piped up and I said, yeah, well, what we generally do is F everything and run, right? So it was, you know, kind of a silly, corny thing to avoid the reality, but yet it still gives that very clear message, is that we create, mm-hmm. right? We can create the fear just as easily as we can create the love. It's simply a choice. And how would you describe that process of making the choice and the things that come up that are in the essence of that, as we distill down and, you know, and peel back the layers, if you will? What's the core of that? What kind of changes in thinking can be instituted in that moment of being able to recognize when you're going there and then trigger a different response?
I think first realization that there is only love. There isn't anything opposite to it. Just like we looked at the 9 aspects of consciousness, there are endless, infinite expressions of love, and the absence of it is fear. But fear is not real because it doesn't exist. It's the absence of love. And every emotion we experience will be a different aspect of expression of love. Anger is possessiveness of love lost. It's my possession. It's my boundary you're violating. Or somebody, you know, it's all one energy that has been expressed through all of the other flows. So the first affirmation or realization is, wait a minute, there's only love. So I don't have to be releasing my fear. I don't have to be getting myself out of sadness. I don't have to overcome fear. I don't have to get, you know, therapy for anger. I just have one thing to do, and that is to surrender to love. And the deeper and the more I surrender to love, the less of false expressions of life are remaining. First, you know, there will be guilt. I mean, first there will be anger that'll start disappearing. Well, pride. First, the pride will start falling off, then the anger, then the apathy. And then at the end, you get to shame. You know, Dave Hawkins on the Map of Consciousness, shame is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And so shame will remain then as the final guard to love. So I said, okay, how does shame look like? And it looks like I'm unworthy. It is a deep subconscious programming for some of us that there is a part of us that is unworthy of a miracle we've come to be. It comes from common consciousness. It is used by governments or by institutions. And then we make them enemies because now they are unworthy of us being unworthy. It's just all a mess, you know. You can only heal it through deep acceptance. But so what do you do in your life? There are choices that we make daily. There are words that we speak daily that are unworthy of who we are as sacred beings. That's the fact. That's little M.
That internal dialogue that Castaneda talks about with Don Juan, right?
Yeah. And so what happens, the programming in our mind is, because I have showed up in the world as through unworthy act, I must be unworthy. So we're shifting it right here, right now. No more sessions needed. No money needs to be spent. Right here, right now, we're going to make a choice. The actions, the unworthy actions, do not define me. They remind me of my worthiness. Because every time I have an unworthy pattern, I remember I'm worthy of sacred love. And this action is no longer worthy of me.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I have chills as I say that because the healing is coming in for anyone who's receiving it. And so now we've opened the portal for you to start truly loving yourself as a being worthy of sacred love. And that is the process of saturation of love that frees you and that allows for the flow.
And thank you very much. It truly does. That was an exquisite walkthrough. What I find and also what it triggered me to kind of reflect on is that, you know, in that place of choice, there is the confusion that often takes place. As we were talking about earlier, we get stuck up here thinking about things, not having a direct experience of it yet, and having to take a leap of faith in order to embrace that. So it's that step into, oh my gosh, I don't know what's going to happen, and I hope that, right? Instead of the clarity of the choice being in such a manner, well, let me ask you, is there a way to find that, acknowledging that that is part of the process that most of us go through in order to find the truth within us? How does one reflect and meet that power of choice in the moment and ascend from that lower level vibratory pattern, if you will?
Yeah, I think it goes back to releasing the pattern of denial when you are in the, you know, in, I teach a lot of kids, so I like the, like, I like the visuals, right? Right now, if you're listening, not watching, I'm holding a glass. You know, there's very little water in the glass. So I like to show it to the kids and I'll say, hey, I'm holding a glass with water. How heavy is it? And there's very little water. And they're like, well, it's super, you know, it's super easy to hold it. It's not heavy at all. And I say, yes, if I hold it for a second. What if I hold it for an hour? How heavy is this glass of water? What if I hold it for a lifetime? So what happens to a lot of us, little unworthy feathers that instead of forgiving fully and releasing become unbearable burdens that we cannot shift. So my invitation is that of acceptance and awareness, right? A lot of people don't accept things because they feel accepting means agreeing or condoning. Acceptance is stepping out of denial into awareness.
It's just recognizing what is and being able to make choices about it.
Yeah. So, you know, like if you're giving me the glass and I'm pushing back on it, I'm rejecting, we're stuck in a tug of war, drains us. But if you give me a glass of water and I accept it, I can now gently put it away. So we accept so we can respond by releasing or receiving. So it all goes back to aware acceptance. Accept all the little M crap in your life. everything, accept it, and then ask, is it time to release it? And just start releasing gently through love. And you know, enjoy the process. It's not about how deep you get into the flow. It's about the flow is the joy of stumbling.
Right.
And that is the flow. It's not, I am doing all of this so that it's, I get to do all of this. I am doing all this. I have a body that can feel all of this. That is the point.
I like the term excruciatingly fun.
Yeah, and it could be just fun. It doesn't even have to be excruciating. But I love it.
I understand. However, the process that we go through in order to find the fun is often excruciating.
Yes.
Once you get used to the process and you recognize, okay, this is going to be uncomfortable for a bit, but I know what's going to happen as a result. Then you can just see it and laugh at the excruciatingly funness of it, right? Mm-hmm. Because you've made that arduous journey, the hero's journey, if you will, within mm-hmm. yourself. And that happens, you can probably relate that that's a continual process. You know, we hope that we're done and finished at some point, and yet the more we learn, the better questions we ask, and the more we find out, and who knows what we might find out. Now, there. Speaking of, there's you'd mentioned that you'd participated in a trip with Bruce Lipton and Greg Braden, both of whom I know, and the there's another Russian academician, being from Ukraine, and of course it was still USSR. When you were there, and it was when my just before my wife left. She left in 1990, and then the dissolution took place. Amazing process of rebuilding that took place from the Russian side of it after that. But the woman's name is Valentina Morovina, and of course, Russian academians, that's the highest science title that the Russian government offers. She put together a 10-year study of the recent scientific discoveries that she says demonstrate that we are in a process of a global mutation in humanity that's leading us toward the ascension, right? Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, the shift from the 3D to 5D. A lot of people say, oh, well, there's going to be this other planet that comes in and Earth's going to separate and things. And I'm like, well, wait a minute, let's look at it from a practical standpoint. What would you see as that transition from a 3D to 5D standpoint, as you know, things are, and let's see if we can have a little discussion about
it's part of my mission this time around. I am on the third year.
How did I know that?
We all know. I'm one of the many programs I do is called Quantum Freedom. And one of the subcategories of that program for really high frequency spiritual seekers is called spiritual gene coding. And so once a month around the full moon, I look at the three sides of the 64 aspects of spiritual genetics, just like our body has genetics, our spirit has genetics. Mm-hmm. So just like little M has DNA, our big E has DNA. And so I look at releasing the shadow of the little M, stepping into the gift that we're given of that shadow, and then expanding into the genetic coding for activating the spiritual DNA. And I do it, you know, once a month. And the best way to describe it is that shadow is not bad. Shadow is an indicator that you're not aligned with the light. That's mm-hmm. it. So if there's sunlight, well, there's a point during a day when there's no shadow because you're directly under the light. So that's all shadows are. Shadow is a gorgeous indicator that invites us back into the alignment with the light. But very often we don't know we're misaligned if the shadow is unnamed. So when you name the shadow and you release your attachment to being in the shadow, you align slowly, and we do it one gene at a time. We're going to go through all 64 combinations and activate that. And so that's one of the, you know, little contributions that I'm called to do for this process, so that the DNA, the spiritual DNA, is fully activated. I believe when there are enough people who have gone through the process of spiritual DNA activation, through whichever way they're guided, there's no wrong way. There are infinite many beautiful paths to do so, that we will
start seek some kind of ritual though, right?
Exactly. We'll go through a spontaneous alignment. It just, the more it's like, you know, herd immunity against the virus, it's herd immunity towards ascension, because eventually it does catch on, you know, when right. Les Brown asked me, he says, you know, do you believe a person can be impervious to environment? Because there are a lot of spiritual teachers says, well, I'm impervious to environment. And I says, listen, if you walk into the ocean and you come out dry, come talk to me. You're the one person on planet Earth who is impervious to environment. All right. Others, if we walk in the ocean, we come out wet. So right now we're shifting the ocean of consciousness for others to respond to environment in order to activate the ascension.
So what I think I hear you saying, if I can explain it simply, is that the world's not going to change. How we work in it is what changes. We go from the competitive nature of an alpha chassis, an alpha mind, if you will, to the understanding of oneness with the beta mind, still having the alpha chassis, and learning how to play together better with an idea, or at least a notion towards harmony among people and planet. And that's kind of it with the effort that I'm involved with right now with Live and Let Live. You know, we have two basic principles, live and let live. The live is a moral principle, be a good human. Well, what's that mean? Well, that gives us the opportunity to unpack it and talk about what that means on an individual level and develop consensus and collaboration from there, that with things that just make sense, right? And then sharing it to make sense common. Then on the let live side, that's called our legal principle, which is don't be an aggressor. And the long-term effort on ground is to calibrate the laws and legislation to remove all aggressive activities, right? So one might say that ultimately we could make war illegal by doing so. Wouldn't that be interesting? So from
I think we're still focusing on not to be, however. Maybe I'm misunderstanding the concept, and I hope that I am, because the longer we focus on what not to be, the more of it we create, you know,
exactly.
Shakespeare. So yeah.
Exactly, which is and yet still those things, seeing things as they are, these laws are in place which allow governments, corporations, whoever, to perform aggressive acts with no, or with impunity, right? So with the being a good human, then it gives people the power to recognize, oh yeah, we can step up, and there's probably only going to be a few percentage-wise that want to tackle the realm of law and legislation in a way of shifting the leadership and the way laws are written. And that, so that's a really small percentage of people in the world. But we still have to have the numbers in order for those people to be able to rise up, and then for us to be able to support them wherever they are in doing what they are doing from that perspective. So it takes a while to do that. Meanwhile, through creating these conversations, we have lounges, and we've got a social enterprise component that, like you were talking about earlier, you can't have peace and poverty. So what we do is we give what were traditionally volunteers in the nonprofit area a chance to be earners and learners. And we have all the materials to train them and educate them in putting on fundraising events. And then they get a share in half of the net profits. So we establish the prosperity or the peace and prosperity within those individuals, because they're being appreciated. They're not just giving themselves, because volunteers traditionally get used up and burnt out. Mm-hmm. Why? Right? There needs to be a reciprocal activity that honors them just as much as the organization, and then creates that capacity for collaboration at a much higher level, in our opinion. So we're still in pre-launch. We don't know if it's going to work or not. However, you know, we've got over 800 members in 35 countries or something like that. So there is some interest, which is kind of
beautiful. Exciting. It's beautiful. And it's, you know, for me, it goes back to one word, live and let live. For me, it's back to love, is life originating vibrant emotions. So
absolutely,
it is all one beautiful aspect of it. But I love how my little M is very happy with how practical you're making it. I think it's brilliant.
Well, yeah. It is. And you know, this was the brainchild of Mark Victor, who I interviewed for One World, A New World in January of 22. Mm-hmm. And I was so magnetized and drawn and prepared to say yes, that in March, I became executive director.
Oh.
And not just me, you're going to love this. My co-director is a woman in Hawaii. So we have a masculine and feminine representation at the head of the organization, which is unheard of. I don't know of any organization that has that equal gender balance. And our complementary skill sets are just amazing. You know, never would have thought these things were possible. What really sealed the deal and made it the universe, you know, synchronicity, is that Mark's office is 3 minutes away from my home, of all the places in the world it could be, right? So that's how the universe has worked for me. And I share that with you, as you have shared with me, that there is this wonderful dance that we can have by simply acquiescing to that greater part of ourselves and having the faith, love, and trust in ourselves to do so.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that?
I agree. And what you're saying without saying, so I want to say it so it doesn't get lost, is that it is a greater self. It is not self, you, Zen, or Mark Victor. It is self of humanity.
Absolutely.
I think the alignment happens when we understand that, because what you're doing is for the benefit of all. And when I see people being blocked in manifestation, they're not explaining to the universe, and they don't quite know themselves, how their desire is a good thing, is an impactful thing, and a nourishing thing for the benefit of all. And mm-hmm. So I think, you know, because for you, it is unconsciously competent. It's like, well, it's no brainer. Why would I want anything else if everybody doesn't benefit from it? But what I've learned is that for so many people, it is not a no brainer. And so even if they're at a point of not even, their manifesting skills are at a survival level and they just want to have a better car, I can tell you, you can visualize it all you want for you sitting in the car. But the second you add to your picture, and I can take my kid to their activities, and I can mm-hmm. give rides to, the second you make it about self as a global, the universe says your wish is my command. So there's a gift in what you just said.
Thank you. Thank you. And I'm honored to give it, and I'm honored and humbled to serve it even more and give my life to it, as I've had 47 years of prep work to get ready. And so I've always wondered, am I ready yet? Do I know enough? Do I have enough? Am I whole enough? And then all of a sudden the universe says, yep, here you go. And then the next challenge happens. It's so wonderful, because I know the outcome is going to be positive and we are going to be successful. I was told that at 18, that this is going to happen. And there's no doubt about it. I gave my life at that time to know it. So, and this is, you know, I know that statement alone probably gets people to go, what? What do you mean you gave your life? Well, we have to give our life. If we don't give our lives to us, to ourself, and our wholeness, our capacity for being, and I like the God principle, the God participle in that. I actually wrote one of my books, it's called The God Participle. If you're familiar with the English language.
Yeah. Principle and particle combined. I love it.
Right. So that, and you know, it's a verb that's given an ing ending and it becomes a noun. So what might that be? Being. That's mm-hmm. the God participle. So that's who we are, is a being incarnate with no resistance, no objections in the pure state to what we can become as a perfected form, fit, and function in the world. And it goes back to what you were talking about and having that spiritual DNA, the 64 strands and or 48 in the flesh, whatever it is, that the two work as one. And have you ever, speaking of, have you ever taken a 3D view of the symbol for Tao, the yin and yang?
No, but I just checked in to see it. So not in my body, not with my physical body, but I just have with my spiritual body.
In many circles, that's known as the second sight, right? Where it just kicks in. So years ago, I had this question because after watching Contact and seeing how they used the blueprints and the primer to actually figure them out, right? So there was a 3D view of a 2D object. So a 3D view of a top-down version of the DNA helix could very well look like the yin and yang. Why?
Yeah.
Because it's light pulses, one side on, one side off, that creates the spin that gives us our reality. And I found that fascinating, so much so that that's just like too simple and nobody's going to believe that.
Well, I want to bring it together so people don't think of them as two different systems. There are 64 codons that create 48 chromosomes.
Let's just align
them so we're not, getting people to go, it's all one and the same. And from a spiritual point of view, for me to echo what you're saying is, because, like you said, I like to ask questions and I'm like, okay, so I get the biology of DNA and RNA. Show me the spirituality of DNA and RNA. And it was so gorgeous because at that point I was healing, speaking of, okay, what is that? What am I needing to forgive? And that was the judgment of appearance. I was bringing people into my life that appeared something that I knew there was no substance for, and I was triggered by it. And I always say, whatever stands in your way, whoever you cannot stand is what stands in your way of spiritual progression. So I was healing that for me through self-forgiveness and saying, show me, show me, show me. And I was showing the importance because in a spiritual term, the DNA is the substance and the RNA is the appearance. And only through substance and appearance being fully reflective is there wholeness and reproduction. For a lot of us, the telomeres, the ends of the DNA, start dilapidating and disappear and we die is because our substance and our appearance are not coherent. And that is the cause for lack of wholeness. Mm. It was so simple. It was like, oh, okay. So know who you are. And back to what you said, be who you are. Know who you are, be who you are. Know who you are, be who you are. And without need of appearing somebody else, because that is damaging to your being.
Right. Now, what seems to be present in far too many of the cases in the population is this sense of codependence, of having to be something for someone else.
Oh, yeah.
How would you deal with that? Or how do you recommend first just acknowledging that to be true? And then what's the next step from that? And how would you suggest releasing that tendency to...
I'm grinning because we're going to lose some friends now. I have one word for it. Stop it. Two words. Stop it. S-T-O-P-I-T. Okay. It's so important to be able to give yourself a permission, a choice, and power to just stop it. So many of us are so engaged in finding causes that we extend the behavior looking for it causes. Well, guess what? Some of the behaviors, we can have a permission to just stop. Mm-hmm. I have conversation with Vika when she is cycling through something that is not very coherent. I'll just say, okay, Vika, stop it. Just stop it. Breathe in and out. Do you see how easy it was to just stop it? We forgot how to stop, Zen. Mm-hmm. We forgot how to stop. Let's resurrect the human power to just stop it. We can't even stop at the stop sign.
When we ask questions, the first things we do is try to answer the questions with our own thinking.
So you go like, just stop it. Can I stop? So it's the right, it's the privilege, and it's an infinite power. And I want us to resurrect that power for us. So, you know, just make a choice and say, you know what? I'm going to just stop it. Little boy goes, but, and you go like, nope, you just stop it. You just stop it. Anyway, humorous. Yeah.
Humorous. Cancel that word, but just eliminate it from your vocabulary. And you've noticed a couple of times I started to say, but in our conversation, and I'd stop myself because I'm working on that. I thought I'd gotten rid of it years ago. That is one of the things that gets in our own way. We'll say, yeah, this is true, but. And so we just canceled everything we just said. Now, there are probably some appropriate uses for the word in conjunctions. However, why would you want to? Just acknowledge things as they are. You know, it's this way and it's also this way. And those two then can have, if they're polarized items, right, they can still have the opportunity to learn how to dance together. And create that spin, because without that polarization, we probably wouldn't have spin. And yet, when we do work through that, we find that that spin turns into the flow that doesn't feel like we're being buffeted in any way. There's this consistent, yeah, I love it. And an awe. Do you, in the awe place, the ineffable, right? How would you, and now I'm going to ask you to describe the ineffable. So how would you equate this sense of awe that becomes present in this process of awareness?
In one word, bliss. In biology, that's the hormone of anandamide. I can describe how one can achieve it in a quick process, because it's accessible to all of us. It's our birthright to feel the bliss. I do want to empower someone who is listening to the conversation. I never, you know, for so many years, truly, my reason was suffocating my intuition because I was reasoning against the intuitive healing. One of the biggest healings I've allowed for myself is to just say, if it comes, share. So I think the point of empowerment that is coming through to share is that we want to use the power of but, because we're trained, unfortunately, to put negative after it. I agree with you, but our brain through centuries is trained to listen to what comes after but. So what if we were to use that powerful wiring to build somebody up? I dislike what you just shared, but it came from such a point of curiosity, love, and compassion that I'm going to see how I can implement it.
Wonderful flip.
The human brain hears what comes after the but. The damaging programming can be flipped to empowering programming. That came through. And I think that that's just, I'm a very practical girl, like I said, so that's a practical tip. If we hear that in our mind now, we will be able to flip it for ourselves into the point of healing. And now in terms of the feeling, all of us have experienced bliss. I like when I center into my heart and my solar plexus to go to the one point that is brought into my awareness at that time when I say what I'm so grateful for. Right now when I close my eyes and think, I see the birth of my first daughter. I see her holding in my hands. And I see this moment and what I'm going to do and what I do for me, I create a bridge for me to that moment. And I send so much gratitude to that moment. And I'm going to receive so much love back. And I'm going to build that flow. All of us have had that sacred moment. It's sufficient to restore the flow. That's all it takes. Find the moment, connect to it, bridge back and forth. Gratitude, love. Until love and gratitude become so powerful within seconds that you choked up. You are now in the flow. Don't make it more complex than that.
And even be grateful for all the shadows too. You know, that's part of the processes I've learned it in being able to integrate. Just embrace everything. Be grateful for whatever you have. My morning ritual, I face four directions and I give gratitude and thanks in for everything. And especially those things that I'm challenged by. Because that's what helps me grow. And if I wasn't challenged, I'd probably be dead somewhere. No.
Let's have you live for your greater cause then. Enough
Oh,
done.
I'm
Let's
living, let live, right? I'm living it.
Cause then.
I'm living the dream. And that's true. I am, right? When people ask me, who are you? I said, well, I am.
In the name of God. Mm-hmm.
I just am, right? And the rest is up to your perception, discretion, whatever your choices are. Now, one of the things that you were talking about earlier was that the thinking process of the answering questions and the rapid pace, and we don't take time to pause and all of that. Well, you know, that is the pause. It's that whenever you feel constricted or in this chaotic place in your brain, you're just not recognizing things, hit the pause button, ask a question or questions, and then shut up. We don't know how to shut up in our head.
Stop.
Right? We're always, that monkey mind is operation. What is it? 70,000 thoughts a day, I think, is what we're clocked at. I'm not sure who had the clock, but it's still, it's amazing how when we, and I think you could probably verify this, when we begin to have greater management of our choices, I don't want to say control because that's just management, right? The thoughts, the extraneous thoughts tend to disappear. And we're more focused on the attention, intention, and interaction that we need to have that has that empathic resonance of something that Matthias DeMott had mentioned to Tucker Carlson when he was interviewed recently, is that he believes we're all just seeking empathic resonance.
Mm-hmm.
And what is empathic resonance? That's what, you know, that's what we feel connected to. What do we want to feel connected to?
Mm-hmm. Well, and the fastest way to find this is to create it. Tell people, so many people are waiting for a miracle. The fastest way is to be one. Be a miracle for someone right now.
So with that, as we're nearing our close here, what kind of advice could you give? You've given several things, but is there something that you could impart as a parting gift to the audience that they could apply on a daily basis?
I think you've guided the conversation. We followed the conversation, I think, to this point, and I do think it's the, you know, I've been asked to teach on mindset throughout the years, and I've given endless talks on growth mindset and positive mindset, spiritual mindset. And
how
then,
about mind flow?
And then I sat down, wait. I sat down and I said, okay, girl, what is mindset? It's not set, it's flow, right? Well, what is flowing? And I came up with 6 mental faculties. Perception, how you receive, you've mentioned gratitude or appreciation. Imagination, how you imagine back, which creates the tuning fork, which is the third one, which is intuition. And then you want to balance intuition with reason, that it serves the intuition, not against it. That was my journey, right? And then you have the memory to remember that you're sacred through this process. And finally, the will, which the whole conversation, you were so beautifully leading us to making a choice. That's a will, right? Willing destiny guides them, unwilling destiny drags them, Seneca. And so those 6 are the powerful mindset for miracles. And as we tune them in the flow, so finding, you heard the 6, perception, imagination, intuition, reason, memory, will. Which one do you feel is the time to tweak? What do you need to release? What do you need to receive in order to tweak that so that that mind flow, that mindset of flow becomes more present in your life, you know? And not ready yet, but because it's been so high in demand, what I am creating is manifestmiracles.me free masterclass that'll have subconscious shifts and activations foundation for each and every one of these faculties. So if it resonates with you, you can go to manifestmiracles.me, and when the free masterclass is ready, to have it and to feel the shift, you know, to feel, not to just overthink it, but to feel it. But my one liner for that is, we have one job, and that is to remember how sacred we are, And we do so through surrendering to love all day long. That's our one purpose.
Wonderful. Victoria, it's been such an amazing pleasure. Just thank you. Thank you.
Thank you from the bottom of my heart. Thank you.
Wonderful. I thank you too, and namaste, and in La Ketch. Thank you for sticking with us for this episode of One World in a New World. I'm your host, Zen Benefiel, and I will see you next time.